Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a UnitedHealthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.
We want the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
AEW Fighter Fest. Okay. 245 minutes, 44 wrestlers, one night.
Maybe we should review wrestling like this every week. Just like watch both Dynamite and Collision back to back and then just go live for 2 more hours after that. Every week. Maybe we should watch all the wrestling, first run programming, like 15 hours straight. Then we could go podcast for 10 more hours after that.
I would love to add up, like, this between now and next Wednesday's four-hour summer blockbuster of, like, the hours of wrestling that will be consumed. I mean, it's probably not that far off than most weeks work out to be anyway.
We should wait until...
We're just condensing two programs into one on one specific night.
Yeah, I think another worthy calculation would be to wait until we're 90 years old. And then try to tabulate all the hours of wrestling we've watched in our lifetime and just to think about how many years of our lives, decades.
You know, that's what Dan Lavransky would do back in the day, was he didn't watch anything during the week. And on Sunday, he just sat down and that was his Sunday. He watched everything on Sunday. And I just didn't know. And he's watching UFC. He's watching like a 3-hour Raw where we've extended to that era. He just consume it all in one day. I would not be able to do that.
I would never be able to. And I feel like that was the era before 2Xing, like, you know, 1.5X was available.
Mouth was not extending the speed. He was
a VHS guy.
I mean, he was watching this in real time, as it gets.
It's impressive.
Well, do want to make mention of the fact that on Thursday, we are going to be hitting you up with the Ask Away Mailbag Show. We have a lot of questions to get through this month. You still have a couple of hours to send in your questions at forum.postwrestling.com, or we can hear your voice on the show. Send in a question, memo.fm/postwrestling. That will be up for all members at the Post Wrestling Cafe on Thursday. That will follow with Friday, we're releasing Post Pro Res with WH Park and Karen Peterson. Way is back with Neil Flanagan on Friday night for Rewind to SmackDown. And then we will get together Saturday evening after Money in the Bank to go through that show. And I'll blitz through Worlds Collide as well, which hopefully is a compact 2.5 hours as well. And then the final show to promote is Sunday. We'll be releasing a UFC 316 show with Eric Marcotte and Jack Wannon, as they will be together to cover the UFC pay-per-view, all the news that's going on in the world of mixed martial arts as the UFC heads back to New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. All right.
On to the show we go away. The Mission Ballroom. 2,500 tickets out, according to WrestleTix, and multiple mentions on the show of it being a sellout. And this was a much more, like, this, it was as it was described, a ballroom kind of setting that they are finding these smaller venues to book. And I think you had a crowd that overall, I would say they too kind of hit their limit at a certain point after, you know, 3.5 hours of pro wrestling. But overall, like it looked good on television. Like it did look pretty full. Like 2,500 is not a number that's going to sound all that impressive on paper, but it really does for atmosphere, just for pure atmosphere. I'd rather have 2,500 in a building like this than, you know, you have 6,000 empties.
Especially for a 4-hour show that's going to require like the hardest of the hardcores to, you know, stick around and to make this place look full. Like by the fourth hour, it still sounded like a very lively crowd. People weren't leaving their seats like after the third hour. At least it didn't look like it. So I continue to just love what they've been doing this year in correcting the booking of, like, you know, cavernous, like oversized venues for their scale. I think it's come across much better on screen, and it's allowed them. Okay, 2,500 doesn't sound great, but what does sound great is to be able to say sell out. And that's ultimately everybody, all anything, you know, so it's whatever people will remember.
Yeah, I'm sold out here in my room. I have
is that true? You have, I think you have
actually
two
chairs. I have two other chairs.
You're so at half capacity. You
know what? Yeah.
What's a turnstile count?
That's it. Well, I will say this as well, of the fact that there were also, like in Colorado, it's mountain time. So it's like a 6 to 10 o'clock show is not like as crazy as 8 till midnight on a Wednesday. You know what I mean? Like, yes. I think that's a little more digestible. But
yeah,
let's go back. I'm just scanning like the beginning of this show, and this feels like I'm recapping last week's show. Do you remember Jon Moxley and Mark Briscoe meeting in a match?
Yes, I do. I mean, listen, okay, we're speaking as if like 4 hours is an eternity. Like we do this at once a month. Like all their pay-per-views are at like 4 to 5 hours. So it feels slightly unusual on a Wednesday. Yeah.
Well, Shivani brings out Will Ospreay at the beginning, and they show the segment that aired on Collision where Swerve and Ospreay got into it after Dynamite last week. And Ospreay again explains he's known Swerve since he was 20, and he just needs Hangman and Swerve to get on the same page for one night. Then they can kill each other because Moxley is the enemy. And he says how AEW has some momentum again because of people like myself, Tony Storm, Omega, Hangman, and Swerve. The reason AEW sucks right now is because you're the world champion. Which I would have changed the phrasing of this somewhat to not say that our product actually sucks right now, but yeah, this is the reason. Like, I'm cool with, hey, we're acknowledging we've got some momentum, like positive, but to outright say that there's this, but like on your own show from your big babyface star that, yeah, the company sucks right now. I just wish this was phrased differently. It's like even if it's, you know, The naysayers are dragged down by your championship or something that can put the heat on Moxley, not on, hey, our company is being dismal in the moment.
Something like, you know, if there's one big blemish of the company right now, it might be this, right? Like, we all know what he means. Yes, I agree. It probably could have been stated a little bit better.
So he goes on to say he can't let Swerve prevent Hangman from becoming champion. So if I have to step in, I love you, Swerve. I'd take a bullet for you. It's like this friendship has it's got some roots in it. I mean, he's
how about a needle to the mouth?
Yeah, I'd take a hypodermic needle for you, bruv. But he said I would take a bullet first for AEW. And he calls out Swerve for a fight next week at the Summer Blockbuster, and in fact, we will get Swerve versus Ospreay rematch of Dynasty last year taking place at next week's show in Portland.
Yeah, a bit surprising. I think, you know, you and I had wondered if this would be one of their matches at All In, and given the fact that it's a second match, they could do a rubber match at All In. That's still always possible, but I wouldn't have expected them to do it so soon on television, but I think it's a great TV main event. Again, like the big three of the company right now feels like it's Ospreay, Swerve, Hangman, and to have any of the pairings on TV in a free match, that feels pretty big.
Forbidden Door last year, Forbidden Door, their previous match, which was a phenomenal match that the two had. We'll talk about that later. And so then Crew interrupt, and Leo Rush has some pent-up anger and calls Will the worst thing about AEW. So Ospreay says, I've got my fake tan, I've got my crime-fighting pants upstairs, mentions that they're sold out, and we've got a match for later. And this was the first, you know, sometimes I talk about Nick Aldis. This was the ultimate show of how many matches they just booked throughout this show to fill it out. It was just constant challenges made that pretty much gave you the back end of this show.
When you got 4 hours of flex, I guess, you know, you're encouraging people to just go out and call.
A lot of people hate matches. Each other in this company. They'll issue some challenges. We'll fill this out. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Did he actually fix his hair? Ospreay. This somehow became like a bigger topic of conversation this past week with like, I think Ospreay mentioning how
if this was fixed, he still needs some work. It did not look like it had been fixed.
He wore a hat, which kind of hit the hair in this opening segment. I forget if in the match. But yeah, he mentioned how upon landing on back in England, the missus told him, we have to do something about your hair. So I think he did something about it.
Okay. John Moxley and Mark Briscoe, non-title. Yuta posts Briscoe, and this led to Mark bleeding. And Moxley is biting the wound, going after it. Moxley stops a J-driller, and Briscoe comes back, tries for the froggy bow, but lands in a choke. Moxley takes the back, then moves to an armbar, and it's Briscoe to the rope. Yuta continually gets involved, puts a hammer lock on Mark, sending him into the steps, and then Shafir rolls him in, but it's Mark hitting a J-driller out of nowhere, but he can't go for the cover. And when he finally does, Moxley kicks out, and they make a big deal out of this because while it had been kicked out of when Jay used it in ROH, it's never been kicked out from in AEW. So, and you did have Ian Riccaboni here to kind of put in that asterisk next to it. First time in AEW history, someone has.
First time on a Wednesday at 9:50 p.m., someone's kicked out of this move.
But then, dude, Ian came to play at Fyter Fest because Mark lifts up John Moxley. Oh, that's the cutthroat driver. He's only used that 8 times in his career. I was like, how did you have that stat just at your convenience here? That just
man is a machine.
So he goes for number 9, but Moxley avoids the cutthroat driver, lucky number 9, and stomps Briscoe, bulldog choke. Briscoe then kicks off the buckle for one last shot to pin him, but Moxley holds on to the choke and Paul Turner waves it off in 14 minutes and 11 seconds in a very, very fun opening match here. Another, the match you would, I think, expect between these two, blood mixed in as well. And I guess it's just kind of interesting of where, like, if you're going to do something with Mark Briscoe out of this after, you know, his letting down his family and, you know, right. his children were watching last week asking if their dad quit, which he didn't technically quit here. They did make it clear it was called off here by Paul Turner.
Right. My gut tells me no. I don't think they're going to do anything with Mark Briscoe. And the next time you see him, he'll cut a fiery promo talking about not wanting to disappoint his family only to lose again. But
I think
having
he
a
needs
great
a
match.
Big win somewhere. Like it can be down the road, but it's just, he's a great character and he doesn't need a lot of wins, but he does need some every now and then.
So it's sort of like the gift and the curse of being that type of wrestler, isn't it? You know, Mark Briscoe is so valuable to your roster because he's a guy who can be inserted pretty much into any show and you can get a great reaction for him because he's going to just, he needs one promo in order to get the crowd on his side because he's already so likable. He'll like fight his like ass off at a match like this and he'll make the heels look amazing. That's what makes him so valuable, and that's also what I think keeps him at this level. Like, he's too good of a loser, you know what I mean? And I kind of feel like Tony sees him at this level. I don't know, you know, beyond an ROH champion level, for instance. I don't know if they see much for him. Like, maybe a Continental Championship run in his future, but world title run, I still feel like we're very far away from that realization.
Timeless Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa faced Julia Hart and Sky Blue with Mercedes out on commentary, but she's not going to sit at the desk. Instead, she gets a table for one as they wheel out a table for her with a giant, and I mean giant steak, with a glass of wine
that looked like cooked to shit here. This looked like like one of the stiffest steaks, probably super cold too.
I questioned if this was a real steak at the beginning because she wasn't even like eating it, but Toni Storm would reveal, at least my impression was, this was real, unless she just bit into God knows what.
It was real, I bet. For just probably not a very appetizing steak by however long this
was. This had to be like 25 ounces. This was gigantic. This was just a slab.
I don't doubt that Renee could eat a whole lot, you know?
Well, so that was her deal here. And then they mentioned her headset didn't work. So we never even got her on commentary. She just sat there and...
Like, that would have really bothered you hearing her chew and
do commentary at the same time. I would have muted it at that point. So maybe it was a blessing in disguise. I shouldn't be complaining. We got the most ironic move in the history of professional wrestling as Julia Hart used Old School.
I would have agreed maybe like 3 years ago. She's far from the youngest in the professional wrestling world these days, okay? How old is Julia Hart now?
Off the top of my head, she's now 23.
And who's sort of our leading contender for like youngest? Javon Evans?
Javon Evans is 21.
21. Okay, that's pretty young. Do we have anybody that's under 20?
There's active? I mean, there's... If we're
how
talking
old are those Vanity Project guys?
Oh, Vanity Project. I don't think any of them are under 21.
Okay, whatever. Anyway, 24. Come on, like, you know, that's already average, I feel, these days.
Well, Storm and Mina go to kiss when they are stopped and hit with Germans, but they get back up, hit consecutive hip attacks, and then it's Storm with the TCM chicken wing on Sky Blue for the sub in 9:49. Storm goes to the floor, just picks up the steak with her hand and starts chewing on it as Mercedes looks disgusted. Will this make the All In Texas video package when they air it before their match?
You will get a cutaway to steak being eaten. I'm sure, yeah.
I mean, it is Texas. Maybe she'll come out like riding, you know, a big bull that she's going to celebrate by eating after.
Hopefully the steak might be a bit better quality in Texas than Denver here. I thought the match was just okay. You know, Blue and Hart working over Mina for most of the match. I thought it was highlighted by a fantastic reaction to Toni Storm, who just continues to feel like one of the biggest stars of the entire show. And I thought she and Mina made a very likable team of baby faces, and they did do some attempt at trying to establish some double team moves, like as a sort of infrequent pairing. I certainly don't mind it, although Thunder Tits is still a thing too, isn't it?
I mean,
or is it not?
Barely.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about the steak more than really anything else coming out of this match. And it's comedy. And for Monet, I thought it worked really well. You know, it's sort of the Toni Storm style of humor, but now Monet is kind of like playing into it as well. And I thought it made Monet pretty interesting as well.
I mean, you want high stakes involved for this program, and you got it. Lexi Nair is with Ospreay. And the match is official with Swerve for next week. MJF comes in telling him to just stay out of Swerve and Hangman's business. He reminds Ospreay, you can't beat Hangman. They're animals. Just let them eat each other. And Ospreay says, I'm thinking about AEW, and points out that MJF doesn't have a chance of beating Hangman. So then MJF tries to get under his skin by asking about his son, Harry, and Will is not happy about this. That's when the Hurt Syndicate walk in, they subdue Will, and we get a moment here with Lashley and Will Ospreay at the end, and potentially teasing something in the following here.
Yeah, Ospreay has been building a lot of programs for himself lately. So, you know, we maybe thought... Swerve might have been the direction for All In. Maybe this is the direction for All In for Ospreay. Ospreay versus MJF feels like a very big match, you know? Also, Ospreay and Lashley with that lingering stare down afterwards. So we could be getting that at some point as well. Or it could be in the direction of a tag, perhaps. Maybe he teams with Swerve against one of these two of them or both of them. Who knows?
You know, of all these matches, I would be most intrigued to watch Ospreay and Shelton Benjamin, like, just that on TV awesome. 1 week. To me, that's the most appealing one here. Like, you know, yeah. he'd have a great match with MJF. They have in the past, obviously. But it's Shelton that I think Will would most like to have a TV match with, probably.
Sounds like a great TV match, certainly.
Yes.
But really, any combination of Ospreay, honestly, with anybody on this roster is bound to be really strong, right? This also, I thought, was a segment that made Hangman Page sound great, because you had both Ospreay and MJF basically teasing the other about being afraid or being unable to beat Page. Mm-hmm. And so even without Page being present in here, it made Page sound like a really unbeatable babyface. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at Kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4-Day Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains June 6th through the 9th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
So that takes us to the Hurt Syndicate segment. They're out. Big chance for Shelton Benjamin and booze for MJF. MVP notes that Lashley used to live here. He now lives in Texas. And they ask, what's your opinion of Denver? And he just puts the big thumb in the air and the thumb goes down. This is going to be Lashley's like big thing coming out of this, this whole alliance.
I like it. He doesn't have to talk. Like, it still makes him look cool. He plays with the reaction really well, just with the twist of a thumb.
MVP says that Lashley and Benjamin are the best team alive. Where are the teams to wrestle the champions? Well, they don't exist. No one is capable of beating them. So MJF then takes over. He wants his AEW title back. That means he has to start wrestling again, and brings up Mystico, who he says is not the best wrestler, because I am. I sold out Arena Mexico. I was the youngest foreigner to do that because I'm a megastar. Go watch Happy Gilmore 2 in July. And that Mystico is just a big fish in a small pond. And I'm going to watch his match next.
Small stinky pond is what he said.
Oh, Jesus. That's just going over the line. And he'll watch his match next week and maybe allow Mystico to wrestle him at Grand Slam Mexico, which I think is actually a great match for Mystico for Arena awesome. Mexico.
I think they're doing a great job of building to Grand Slam Mexico on this show. This show felt like it was like almost all your matches felt like they were crossover matches with, like, you know, CMLL talent. And they're just like very slowly, but also like making a strong effort at just pushing all those guys, so that by the time we get to Grand Slam Mexico, we'll know who they are. And they had a great Mystico package earlier on the show as well. And having MJF, somebody at his level, call out a Mystico automatically makes that match and makes Mystico feel like the bigger star that I think everybody else knows him to be.
They are confronted by Speedball Mike Bailey, Kevin Knight, and Commander. And Commander is the one to take the microphone and cuts a promo on MJF. And the crowd, like, gets into this. They're chanting Lucha at the end of this. Mm-hmm. And then Bailey takes the microphone. I'm like, this would be the opposite order of which I would be going in, I think, if I was like, who's going to speak on behalf of the group? Knight would have been my first call here. But they let everyone get a chance here to speak. And
I'll tell you what. I thought Commander came across the best.
He came off really well here. Like, it was, you know, he kind of just went into Spanish, but you got the gist of what he was saying. He was defending Mystico, and
but the fire was there, and more importantly, this was a crowd that was reacted to it. Yes. I looked it up, and Denver has like a 27% Hispanic population. I didn't realize that about Denver. So clearly, plenty of people here understood what he was saying, even though most of us at home did not. But he sounded great, I thought.
MVP laughs them off. Knight is the last one to speak. He wants them tonight, but the Hurt Syndicate turned them down because you haven't earned it. You need to impress us. And also the fact that these three were booked in a match in 5 minutes time. So yeah.
It's really rare to see like Commander get any sort of like prime focus as like the guy that we're supposed to be thinking of. Tonight, well, I felt like we were.
This next match was off the charts. It was Speedball Knight and Commander against Rush Dralistico and Beast Mortos. And they mentioned Kevin Knight doing 12 matches in 25 days in the Best of the Super Juniors. They get control of Bailey, including a spot where the three of them lift up, they lift Bailey over top and just launch him to the floor onto Knight and Commander. There is a backstabber by Mortos onto Bailey, followed by the double stomp from Dralistico. And then Dralistico was another one. Man, did he just look excellent in this match. He hits this springboard into a destroyer on Commander. Both are down. Then we have LFI drop kicking everyone out. There's a triple dive spot by the babyfaces, and the crowd is chanting for AEW. Pop up Samoan by Beast Mortos onto Commander, and then a springboard crucifix bomb from Dralistico, but the save gets made. Bailey hits the tornado wheel kick to Mortos, and then it's Commander with the rope walk into a dive and the UFO splash by Kevin Knight pinning Beast Mortos. This match cooked. This was just excellent.
Is that the first time you've used the term cooked?
Dude, I saw that steak earlier, and that's been stuck in my head.
Yeah, I mean, so again, this week certainly, and I think it extends beyond this week, but it feels like this week in pro wrestling in North America, Mexico is the biggest battleground between these two promotions, and therefore it feels like it's almost a byproduct of all that, that all of these luchadors are getting like great focus and great attention on these shows. And somebody like Commander, who's been so consistent for all this time, has largely like felt like one of the more undervalued people as just this sort of supporting act who's there to like, you know, take pins. Tonight, it was really great to see him get this focused role, being the first to speak on the microphone. And I thought totally stealing the show in this particular match, getting the biggest spots. Like you, John, I also thought Dralistico looked great. And I really enjoyed LFI as a trio here. So a really, really strong team of baby faces and a really strong team of heels that I thought made each other look really strong.
Yeah, I think Commander, like there was, you know, it would sometimes be the inconsistencies where he would hit like some of these incredible looking spots. And then there's others where it was just he's dialed it all together. And it just feels as though like the in-ring stuff is just it's improved. But you've also got more of a focus on him in this segment as well. Like, I think definitely you could do an MJF Commander match at some point. I almost thought that's what they were leading to. But instead, the Hurt Syndicate return, and you have won the prize of facing us in a trios match. And so that will be happening next week. And
yeah, as soon as I say I'm really excited to see them push Commander and getting announced for this match, I don't know if that push will extend beyond next week.
Because I mean, he could be the fall guy in that one, but
he most likely will. I mean, if the build is towards MJF versus a luchador in Mystico, I feel like Commander's probably taking the pin.
So Knight and Bailey, as Jet Speed, run them out of the ring. When MJF enters, Commander hits a springboard dropkick, taking them out. And they let the baby faces stand tall here. They let the, you know, instead of the Hurt Syndicate, you could have just gone with, oh, they're tired after the match. They get beat up for heat. I like the fact that they gave these guys, like, the you know, the Hurt Syndicate have, you know, they sell so much more. And it's a way more captivating act when they're at least, you know, it's not just total domination by this group in their matches or even in a segment like this that, to me, enhances the match for next week.
We'll see you next
week.
Until
Lashley murders Commander and MJF pins him with his pinky. Alicia interviews Paragon with Daniel Garcia, and Cole says, we have mutual respect. None of us can stand the Don Callis family, and we're going to whip their ass tonight. Garcia says, there's a lot of things I want. But getting the Don Callis family is number one. So he agrees to team with Paragon tonight.
When he said there's a lot of things I want, he pointed to the Cole's TNT championship. And I just kind of winced because I feel like these two have been each other's vortices for so long. I think I'm just ready for these two to like move on from one another.
With exception to the jacket, is Garcia the red herring here when really we should be worried about Kyle O'Reilly eyeing this belt?
I think if you're Kyle O'Reilly, you're just hoping to have any sort of significant role beyond just being a background player, occasionally doing air guitar with like Hiroshi Tanahashi. Like I've been so disappointed in, really the entire Paragon. I've been disappointed in the name, but I've been disappointed in particular Kyle O'Reilly, who I thought upon return should have been inserted into a much bigger role on this show. And months in, he's a background player at the moment.
Max Caster held his open challenge. He's got a petition to pledge that he's the best wrestler alive, gets the referee to try and sign it, and then starts his chant, which more and more people are getting into.
It's getting over for sure.
Yeah, it's like everyone's like, it's
like we're kind of in on the joke, and therefore we know we're supposed to hate him. So we're going to do the opposite. We're actually going to cheer for him, and we're going to actually try to chant the chant that's incredibly difficult to chant.
So he is 0-10 in these challenges, and he puts the graphic up for 5 minutes. Powerhouse Hobbs answers the challenge, absorbs an eye poke, but then catches him with a giant slam and wins in 48 seconds. So 0-11 for Max.
Yeah, somehow in a roundabout way, like Max Caster has gone from being in a very over tag team to being completely forgettable and just like bottom rung, you know, wrestler to, I think, now gaining some momentum again and probably getting over as a part of this, like whatever gimmick he's trying to do. So there you go. We also had a patriarchy segment prior to this, John, where it was Christian Cage and Nick Wayne. And
yeah. So we had Lexi Nair with Christian, Nick Wayne, and Mother Wayne. Cage insulted Denver, referring to the thin air cutting off oxygen to your brain, and says Wayne had a good showing in the Best of the Super Juniors, but he didn't win. And usually you'd get a night off after that schedule, but not you. We're going to keep this momentum going. You're going to defend the ROH pure title. And Nick Wayne says, that's light work tonight. And then Christian says, well, it's going to be a four-way. And Christian is going to be watching closely. And Kip is working on an even bigger surprise,
which we never saw paid off tonight.
No even hint of this later.
And thank you, chat room, for reminding us that Nick Wayne happens to be 19 years old. So that's our new barometer. It's five whole years younger than Julia Hart.
Tons.
But by the way, Kevin Knight, Nick Wayne, both coming back from the Best of the Super Juniors, got some, obviously, like in a segment like this. But at this point, like, were you expecting more? Or this was this about standard?
It was an acknowledgement of it. I mean,
like, what value is AEW getting from these? It doesn't seem like it's a whole lot, you know, other than giving their talents international experience.
There is that. I think like a Nick Wayne, like that's the kind of thing. I think that's a great experience for him. I'd even say the same for Kevin Knight. It's like, it is your partner. You're doing a favor there. And for you, I mean, it would maybe be a different thing if either of them had won the tournament or gone to the finals. I mean, both were out in the round robin stage. I don't think it would have hurt, though, that you could have at least showed like a highlight pack. Like, here's where Nick Wayne was the last month. Like, show him with all these international junior heavyweights and him, like, look very good. Like, both of them, they had very good showings in the tournament. Show them that, like, here they are in a different setting, and you just come across like that much bigger, like that you're wrestling overseas, and just do a highlight pack. I think you could get away with that. But then they'd have to go 4 hours and 10 minutes. So
sure.
Kenny Omega with Máscara Dorada, Claudio Castagnoli, and Brody King for the international title. And so my over-under was greatly off.
It's, you know, there's a lot of wrestling to fit in on this show.
I just looked at this. This is 4 hours. And how much are they going to fill on this show? And, you know, you got 18 out of these guys. So it was not insignificant. Omega and Dorada, early on, they're left alone, and this was like this was kind of the interaction I was most looking forward to, seeing Omega with Mascara Dorada. But this was structured very well, like just a fast-paced four-way. We got all of these dives, including the Terminator dive by Omega, which prompts Excalibur to know, were you aware of this? He had diverticulitis.
You know, I had forgotten.
It's crazy.
In the past 6 days.
Well, Claudio also heard Excalibur, obviously, because then he went after the midsection. I guess Excalibur disclosing this medical condition. So King at some point got busted over the eye. So he's working half this match with blood flowing down his face. And Omega lifts Brody onto his shoulders, as Ian notes, a test of the core. And Claudio then with a European uppercut into the doomsday device that Omega and Claudio perform onto Brody. Then we see a B trigger on Claudio. Dorada stops a one-winged angel with a poison Rana, and then King runs over Claudio with a lariat. So everybody is down. Giant swing to Brody. Then the neutralizer is hit. Omega's in to stop, and Dorada hits this incredible tilt-a-whirl head scissors onto Claudio. And shooting star press by Dorada off the middle rope to Claudio on the floor, then follows with a Fosbury on the other side to Brody. And Omega is left alone with Dorada as he catches a Rana attempt off the top turnbuckle and turns it into the one-winged angel. 17 minutes and 37 seconds, Kenny Omega retains the championship. Another excellent match on this show.
Amazing.
Make it for two of them.
Yeah, yeah. I thought this was like more than a pay-per-view quality four-way, and I thought everybody looked good here. Claudio did a great job as the only heel of the group. Brody King is always impressive, and I thought he was very creative in a lot of the two-on-one power spots. I thought Mascara Dorada was able to achieve a level of reaction that made him look special, despite being the one getting pinned here. So everybody came across really well in this excellent showcase.
Yeah, I was curious if there would be any hint to I just can't imagine Omega is not in a big match at Arena Mexico, and that could be a tag. It could be a singles match. I didn't get the sense coming out of this that I was watching this, like, would they do something to lead to Omega and Dorada? And I certainly, you know, the guy took the fall, and I don't see them.
They could.
There's lots of people you could throw with Omega onto that show, but I do hope you put Omega on that Arena Mexico show. I think that would be one person you'd want to build a big show, a big match towards for that one. But then Okada comes out, and this crowd, they react, holy shit. And it was the perfect reaction they would have wanted for this. The two hold their belts up in each other's face, and then they go at it, and Okada goes to the body. And a Rainmaker is avoided, the One-Winged Angel is avoided, and Okada rolls out of the ring. And the big announcement before the main event that they made you wait like 3 hours for was that their match will take place, winner takes all, at All In Texas, in their first match, first singles match since 2018.
It's big. This is the first match that they teased for All In way back when, and we got confirmation. In terms of just like actual content to build towards this, like, it's been very minimal. I don't think they've even really like shared too many words with each other, but it's a feud that kind of sells itself just with the
goes graphic. Back to World's End when Kenny came back, and that was like he confronted Okada after the Continental Classic. Like, this has been just like subtly, you know, they put this in the back of your mind. You knew it was coming.
The stare down really is all you needed. I mean, this is, I would say, in modern wrestling, the most legendary or at least revered rivalry that we have, with two still active wrestlers. So he's saving it for his stadium. It just alone feels big. I have seen some discussion about like, hey, like, you could do a little bit more to explain why this is such a big deal to people who might not have been watching New Japan. And I think that's a very valid thing to say. To that end, Nigel mentioned that they're going to do a video package in addition to the contract signing next week.
Is this the first time ever that a video package has been promoted a week in advance? We're going to explain this next week.
I also think it might be Nigel just like trying to shut up the audience who might be complaining. Why aren't you explaining what's going on here?
Yeah, I'm of two minds that I agree. Like, you do have to do that stuff. I think as well that even if you were not following New Japan at that time, like, I think at this point, like, you know that these two have a history. And sometimes I'd like that you leave your fan to hopefully want to go and investigate this and find all of this for themselves. Like, you know it exists, but yes, you do have to use your television. So I hope Tony,
especially if you have access to the footage, which they do. Yeah.
The bigger question, though, this video package, are we going to get a licensed song?
Of course you are. Do you know Tony Khan?
What will it be? That's the question.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, man. We have a whole week to wonder. The other thing I liked about this is after the announcement was made, like, Tony Schiavone made such a big, like, the man was just elated that this match will be happening in front of his eyes. Like, Don Callis goes to sit down at commentary. He's like, I need your reaction to Okada and Omega being announced. Like, they tried to make this like a big deal, this announcement.
Oh, as they should. Again, it's, I guess, in terms of legacy, the biggest match they can make with two active wrestlers, right? It's worthy of being treated as a dream match, because I think it is. They have a lot to live up to, these two. An incredibly high standard to live up to, and they're both older. So, and having gone through diverticulitis as well in one of their cases. So,
I know it's a very high benchmark, and somehow I am not too worried about this. These two, it's like they're at an age. I think that they will know. Part of it is also just seeing Okada have that match with Mike Bailey, and the fact that this is Kenny Omega. These two are probably going to have minimum 30 minutes, I would think, for this match.
I think so too.
But it's a huge standard.
Where would you put this on the card?
It can't go last. I think there's only one match that can go last.
No, it has to be Mox and Paige.
Maybe this goes right in the middle of the show.
And who do you put after this? Who's going to follow Okada?
Paragon.
Of course, yeah.
That's their always. Role.
Paragon, you guys, and Don Callis family.
You guys follow Anarchy in the Arena. You headline the four-hour TV show. Like, that's Paragon. It's like the impossible slot. That's what Paragon does.
Love it. Love it.
Ricochet is in the back. He's going to have his eye on talent tonight as he continues to scout. Will Ospreay against Lio Rush. And we got the flip over here at this point. We're well into the third hour. So Nigel was on with Tony Schiavone for the rest of the show. And we see Rush avoiding a hidden blade early on. Action Andretti is getting involved, leading to Rush with a poison Rana and then the rebound stunner. The crowd chants Lio sucks, and Nigel notes they're getting his name wrong. Rush then leaps off the corner into a cutter. Then it's an Os cutter by Will for a two count, and Action grabs the foot from the floor, stopping a hidden blade, so Ospreay takes out both with a space-flying tiger drop. Stormbreaker gets countered with a tornado DDT, and Lio hits the final hour. Will kicks out, and this should have been a big near fall, but there was not a person here who thought Lio Rush was pinning Will Ospreay. So Andretti sends him a chain, but Lio gets caught by the referee, and a Rana is turned into the Styles Clash, and Will wins in 9 minutes. Afterwards, Andretti attacks, and they give a double-team neckbreaker to Ospreay when Hangman arrives, and Action retreats as Paige is setting up for a buckshot lariat. So it's Hangman helping Ospreay. I like the fact that Ospreay won with the Styles Clash and just every now and then winning with a different move. And it just makes that near fall spot mean more in those matches. All you have to do is once in a blue moon win with one of these moves, and it just allows your audience to bite on those near falls when you want to, instead of it just being, you know, you're telegraphing this is not the finish.
Yeah. I think the Styles Clash exists sort of like somewhere in between the Os Cutter and maybe the Hidden Blade, you know, as like a finish that you could buy. And I guess against somebody who's ranked on the level of a Lio Rush, it's a sensible, you know, finish to use. Very good match. You know, these two are like two elite level high flyers, guys who just have picture perfect technique with almost everything they do, and everything they do usually has a really high degree of difficulty attached to it as well. I think, I know that they last wrestled in 2016. I looked that up. For Southside, I imagine, like, without the constraints of television, nor without the constraints of Lio Rush being a lower ranked guy at present, these two would probably have that much stronger of a match. And I hope someday they get to have that on television.
Yeah. This didn't reach the level of the other two matches that, preceded this earlier in the show with the trios match and the four way. But it, like, fine television match,
perfect TV.
Fine would be underselling it too. Like, it was a good match for the time it had. Just an audience that was not going to get into the big near fall with Leo. But Hangman stays out in the ring and says that if Will has my back, then I have his. But I don't need anyone's help to win the title, including help from one of the worst men to ever walk this planet. And he refers to Swerve, who threatened the safety of my own family for his own glory. And I made a promise last week. I'm going to make another promise. I will never need or accept help from Swerve, but I will defeat Moxley and hold the title above my head, and it will be my night. And boom, appearing out of nowhere is Jon Moxley in the ring as the Death Riders circle, and Ospreay runs back with a pair of chairs and the Death Riders retreat. But this is our first face-to-face of Hangman and Moxley since Hangman won the Owen and the slow build towards July 12th.
Good little teaser for the main event. I mean, at present, coming off a Double or Nothing, Paige feels like such a hot character, hotter than, you know, even heading into it. And with the way they put over the threat of Moxley and the Death Riders, and Ospreay doing a great job of doing that, even Moxley feels really strong despite losing Anarchy in the arena. Now I think about that, and I do wish there were more concrete repercussions of Anarchy in the arena, because at present it's like 2 weeks out. Didn't really mean anything, you know, very entertaining match, but like the Death Riders aren't really hurt by it. I just wish that there's something that could have lasted from it to make that match mean more.
I would have liked at bare minimum, just a promo of the effects of Anarchy in the arena and just something exactly that the Death Riders, like it was a big shot to them as a group, like losing this, they have to regroup. They're on the defensive, just something like that, because you're right. It's kind of in this context. It was, you know, this super entertaining match. Everyone enjoyed it. But we're kind of like right back to where the Death Riders were going into it instead of kind of selling the impact of the loss.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
So Lexi is with the Don Callis family. This is where I got so confused, because Don Callis accepts Adam Cole's challenge from earlier to face the Don Callis family. But then he says, Bandido, you've cost me money, so why don't you get the Outrunners, because we've hired the best luchador in the history of wrestling, Hechicero, who comes in. We're going to kick some ass tonight. I was like, wait a minute. So you're accepting the challenge from Adam Cole, and then you are calling on Bandido and the Outrunners to face them tonight. I was very confused in the moment until I realized the Don Callis family now has enough members that they can accept a trios challenge and have another multi-man match as well tonight with an 8-man tag. That's how big this group has now gotten.
Yeah. How many members total? What are we at?
Like with Hechicero, now there's seven.
Seven?
Plus Callis is eight. And Brian Cage is injured, so that would be nine.
Right.
This is a big family.
It is, yeah. Big table. He's a very effective heel manager, I suppose.
FTR against Atlantis Jr. and Templario. Cash won't shake Atlantis Jr.'s hand at the beginning, so a double team sends FTR to the floor, and FTR is begging off, but then Cash hits a German off the middle rope. Templario lands on his feet and then rolls into a spinebuster. FTR work over Templario, and this is when Schiavone plugs the big announcement from Tony Khan. Atlantis Jr. and Templario hit double tope suicidas, and we see a cutter delivered to Dax after elevating Templario for a splash, and there's a roll-up on Cash for a big near fall. Atlantis Jr. and Templario avoid the shatter machine. There's a jackknife cover onto Cash, and then Templario lifts Cash for a vertical suplex when Dax pulls out the leg from under him from the floor, and Cash lands on top for the pin in 13 minutes and 46 seconds. FTR get the win, and Stokely notes they are the winningest team in AEW. Dax goes to speak. The fans boo, so he, y'all, I'm not going to speak to you. And that was it. He deprived Denver of a promo.
Mm. on a 4-hour show, damn, what are we going to fill the rest of the time with? Shit. This was the match where I felt like the crowd's energy dipped, you know, and I think the length of the show maybe was catching up to them by this point. And it's also due to the fact that I don't think the babyface team in Atlantis Jr. and Templario were very well established here. You know, like, again, I think the show did a great job of introducing a lot of the luchadors, or at least reintroducing a lot of the luchadors to an AEW audience. But they usually do that by combining them with somebody who's already an established AEW act. Atlantis Jr. and Templario are just kind of out there on their own. And as a result, despite how, you know, strong of a heel group FTR are, as a babyface team this deep into the show, I didn't think that they garnered a very strong reaction. I also thought the match was a little bit too long as a result of this deep into the show.
Yeah, I sense the same, like, with the crowd, where it did feel as though, you know, everything that was advertised for this show had pretty much been delivered by this point. Like, the only thing, like, going into tonight, the only thing you still had to await that was promoted in advance was Tekla's debut. Like, everything you would have come to this arena to see, you had seen by this point. And now, even with some great wrestling, it's like you were filling out the rest of these 2 hours throughout the night. And you can argue, like, should they have maybe put the four-way on later? Like, would you have risked, or just give them that 2.5 hours that we know is going to be the strongest and then kind of fill out the rest of the show? But I thought it extended to this one too, with Konosuke Takeshita, Kyle Fletcher, and Hechicero against Los Outrunners and Bandido, which Callis referred to as Los Idiots. And this saw Bandido caught on a dive attempt and get powerbombed to the floor. Then they get the advantage on Truth Magnum for a long period of time. The highlight of this was Nigel McGuinness citing the Yave style. Yave, which means key, because every opponent is a lock that needs a key to be beaten.
Very nice.
I liked it. Takeshita hits a blue thunderbomb to Bandido for a 2 count. Kyle avoids the 21-plex, and then as Bandido goes for a cabrada, he's upside down with Kyle super-kicking him. They triple-team Bandido. He counters with a super bomb, with a super power bomb with a Frankensteiner, and then Takeshita and Fletcher hit double half-and-half suplexes on the Outrunners, boots in the corner, and then stereo brainbuster raging fire as the Don Callis family get the win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another one that was definitely into deeper waters and maybe a bit more of a struggle, but I actually thought this match was a lot more successful than the one prior, and I think so much of it is because you had well-known personalities, or at least better-known personalities on the babyface side of things. The Outrunners in Bandido, for whatever reason, works really well to me as a trios. You know, I think
the Outrunners were in masks as well. They wore these pink lucha masks as well. Yeah, like, they had fun Outrunners with it here. Yeah. I just thought it was a little, like, the selling with Magnum, it went on for a long period. And then when Bandido got in there, it did heat up.
Yeah, I mean, I think they kind of help each other in that, like, having Bandido with the Outrunners certainly ups the in-ring quality of those matches. But having the Outrunners with Bandido improves his connection to the audience. And I just looked this up. I didn't realize that they had already tagged with each other, both at Global Wars in Australia and also on the Jericho Cruise. So, like, this is actually a very established team at this point, and it's one that I would welcome, like, continuing beyond even this Grand Slam show in Mexico. So, I enjoyed the match.
Megan Bain and Penelope Ford are in the back, and they have beaten down Anna Jay, and they state that they give a message to Harley Cameron, and Bain brings her out into the arena with Ford and is instructed to send her off of the stage when we get the returning Ty Mello, who comes out to save Anna Jay. And this is Ty Mello, who we have not seen on AEW programming in 2.5 years. She did wrestle earlier this year for Stardom, but this is her official AEW return.
Mm-hmm. And with reports of Harley Cameron reportedly taking a bit of a break, whether or not due to legitimate injury or worked injury, Ty Mello seems to assume that role with her former tag partner in Anna Jay. It's good to see her back. It's good to see her, like, find a solid role for herself against this Megan Bain, Penelope Ford team that, you know, receives very consistent airtime. So I'm looking forward to seeing how she looks now, you know, several years removed and having gone through motherhood. I'm also curious to see, whenever Harley Cameron does come back, how that affects the chemistry of the tag team between her and Anna Jay. because that can result in interesting storytelling as well.
Lexi was with Anthony Bowens and Billy Gunn. Bowens notes that it is the pride of pro wrestling month, and this is going to be a month of big moments. So he issues a challenge to Kyle Fletcher for next week and ends it by saying, I have five rules. I have five tools and one rule. Prove them wrong.
Yeah. Honestly, this week, I feel like Max Caster won in the battle of the former Acclaim members, you know, like somehow Max Caster
was close
feeling,
this week,
feeling like he's in a bit of a better spot. I mean, I think Anthony Bowens is fine. There's nothing inherently wrong with these promos, but I'm sorry, he comes across really generic to me. And I know he's not generic, you know, like there's something that should be a lot more interesting about him, but I just find like the act and the promo is pretty bland in my opinion.
How old's Billy Gunn? Is he 19?
He's a bit older than that, I think. Yeah, I think he's got t-shirts that are older than 19 years old.
Nick Wayne, Sammy Guevara, AR Fox, and Lee Johnson for the ROH Pure Championship with Ricochet on commentary. Guevara hit dives onto both sides of the ring. We got a lot of chance for AR Fox in this match. He was very over. There was a chant of Daddy's Boy directed at Nick Wayne. And then Wayne and Fox are alone, and they do bring up their history of when Swerve and Fox stormed the gym with Nick Wayne and that they hate one another. So Johnson is draped on the middle rope when Fox springs over into a destroyer, pile-driving Johnson into the mat, which Nigel said he calls the Pete Roll, which is one of his trainees that he has named that after. This looked insane, that I don't know how many people would be volunteering to take this. Wayne gets his knees up on a Swanton attempt by Fox and hits the Prodigy Plex to retain the title in 11 minutes and 7 seconds. A fun match. Like, none of these matches, I say, were not entertaining.
Collision level match. Like, not
they were collision level matches and at times, like, fighting with a crowd that has now been, they've watched a lot of wrestling, and there's still, like, a decent amount of wrestling still to come.
Yeah, if you're looking at this like it's like a traditional wrestling card that should be building to like the thing you're most interested in, it's not going to make sense. But it might make sense when you look at the ratings graph, or at least the predicted ratings graph of what a 4-hour block might look like. You know, if you're just trying to if you want to take advantage of the most eyeballs with your biggest things off the top, and then, you know, slowly just like petering down so that you're trying to fill the content, but also not lose too many people at the same time. Maybe it makes sense, to put this match here. It was a good match, you know, it's about as much as I can say about it. They did a heavy tease of Ricochet potentially picking up Blake Christian and Lee Johnson as members of his stable. So I know he teased Crew. That could have been just a misdirect. Could end up with Christian and Blake Christian and Lee Johnson, which I think would fit too.
Tekla made her debut. They did a vignette for her earlier in the show, which was really well done. And she came out, like, I really liked just the entrance, the look. I thought they introduced her pretty well here. I mean, This is very late in the show with Lady Frost. She's like fish hooking Frost's mouth. So the referee warns her. And then she lands this forearm and goes right into the spider walk. And this thing just looks like the way she just snaps over. It looks really cool.
I mean, it's like Braze, but she does it even faster.
Oh, she does it really quick.
Yeah.
And spears Frost, applies the death trap and submits her in 2.5 minutes, reapplies the hold when Queen Aminata runs out to save Lady Frost and sets up a match for next week. But, this was super late in the show, and it was a fine debut for her. Like, she really does have a good presence about her, and this was all it needed to be.
Yeah, well, first I want to say, like, great job by AEW production with this rollout. Like, everything from the spider sort of Easter egg type of thing to, like, these, like, a great video package, great-looking entrance. The presentation for her, I think, alone made her feel like a big deal. Bigger deal than I certainly expected for Tekla coming off of the stardom. In-ring, I certainly would have had this earlier in the night. Like, if your job is to establish somebody new, like, this came when? Like, the last half hour?
Wait, they were pushing this so far that part of me was thinking, are they going to put her on last on this show?
Oh, my God.
Like, yeah. I didn't look at the Paragon as, like, this is our big main event at the end of this. And really, the show was not peaking for hour 4. The show was really peaking for, like, 10:15 to kind of hit its peak.
And again, like, if I don't know, like, if your goal is to try to introduce a new face to as many eyeballs as possible, I wonder if you would put her a bit earlier. Anyway, but like, in terms of just her in-ring energy, it's very high intensity. And in terms of how great her striking looks, she immediately entering into the system, like, already is delivering some of the fastest and heaviest looking strikes for somebody of her size, certainly. I thought the spear and the finisher looked good. So I'm very excited to see more of her.
Yeah, it's like she tries to, like, mimic her offense as though she were a spider, like, where she's caught.
How does a spider deliver a kick?
Well, they explained this when she was caught in the rope, and it's like she was luring Lady Frost into her web, and then boom, she, like, kicked her. It's like when Randy Orton was, like, in the, like, your mid 2010s, when he was actually trying to become a viper in his offense and slither in the ring. It was like, right, we're going a little far with this, but you can have some fun with it. Then we had Queen Aminata with a great promo. I am the African queen. And you know what we do to spiders in Africa? We stomp on them. I'm like, we do that too. I mean, to be fair, I think all continents lay claim to this. So she issues a challenge to Tekla for next week, and we'll find out who gets stomped. Unfortunately, I think it will be the African queen that gets stomped.
Yeah, logic says, yeah, probably that.
But a good promo from Aminata here. We had the announcement of Omega and Okada, and announced for next week, the Summer Blockbuster in Portland. Swerve and Ospreay 2, Mystico will appear, the Hurt Syndicate against Speedball, Kevin Knight, and Commander, Anthony Bowens against Kyle Fletcher, Tony Storm against Julia Hart, non-title, with Mercedes on commentary, Tekla against Queen Aminata, a contract signing with a video package for Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada. I think they close with the video package.
Hour-long video package, how about that?
That should be hour four. Yeah. Just air
the match.
The last match that they had and do the final 90 minutes of those two. You could do a lot worse than that. That would actually probably do pretty well on television, to be honest. I'm not even kidding.
I wouldn't completely dislike the idea.
Well, they had to continue on. And our main event, Josh Alexander, Lance Archer, Trent Barretta, and Rocky Romero against Paragon and Daniel Garcia. So,
see, the real draw of this evening for these guys would have been a camera on them as they walked up to the board and saw where they were slotted for this match.
Yeah, they're on board number 3 at the end of the hallway. So, yeah, probably had the same look Kyle had on his face right here as he saw when he was going on.
Imagine if they showed up early to the building for this.
Yeah, well, they'd be like, this pair is gone from this. So Trent does Adam Cole's pose. Garcia would stack 3 of them for punches in the corner until Archer grabbed them by the throat. Callis said that first he talked about Omega and Okada and his tie into that feud in New Japan. He says that Trent's mom was an albatross over his career. She was also a stooge. They work on Garcia. Strong dumps, just lifts up Rocky and dumps him back first onto the barricade. They seat them on the floor, and Kyle hits his flying knee, and then Archer takes out everybody. Cole is alone with Trent, lands a super kick, and goes for the Panama Sunrise. It's stopped. Garcia prevents Strong Zero from happening, and Romero leaps into a super kick from Cole. He's left alone, takes the boom. Adam Cole pins Rocky Romero. We are now at 12:04. Garcia raises Cole's arm while he's eyeing the belt when Takeshita and Fletcher come out, just to including all the Don Callis family members that we could get onto one shot at the end. And that's how the show ends at 12:05 a.m. Eastern time, thus concluding Fighter Fest.
Yeah.
Which may have been might have been longer than Fire Fest. I'll just say this at the end. There was some exceptional wrestling on this show. There is no wrestling program that ever needs to be 4 hours. We lived in an era where, like,
TV program, you mean?
TV program.
Yeah.
I could extend that to some pay-per-views as well. But what I would say is we get these AEW pay-per-views that are built up for a month.
Yeah.
And they go all out once a month for a big show. You have built up all of this. I do not think that this extends to television. For most of our lifetime, pay-per-views would never even flirt with 4 hours. They would cap at 3 hours. It's just a lot for this. There's extenuating circumstances. They're doing it again. you have to look at how this performs, and we'll see that, and that will ultimately dictate this. But for me personally, this was 4 hours. That was, I thought, a really great 2.5 hours, and then they extended it to 4. But
You heard it here first, everybody. John Pollock wants 2.5 hours of Dynamite every single week.
If you are not leaving this, like, if this does well, like, let us look at this SmackDown permanent change be a lesson, okay? The mm-hmm. idea of Collision moving to Thursday and Dynamite also moving to 3 hours, I think all these things are on the table.
Dynamite at 3, I think, is going to become a bigger possibility. Like, if we're just, again, like, I look at the success of this show as whether or not the 2 hours at 10 o'clock did perform better than the 2 hours of a Collision would do in other random slots throughout the week. And I have a feeling it will, just because you're dealing with, you know, you're hanging on to a much bigger audience that's watching AEW. It's not an optimal viewing experience. I feel like Tony Khan would agree with that. But does it tell you what an optimal viewing experience would be for an AEW? And is that optimal experience, while also taking into account how much they can push, how much they can sell to TNT or TBS, is that 3 hours for these programs?
I would go so far as to say that by the end of this contract, I'd almost be surprised if Dynamite does not extend to mm-hmm. a third hour at some point. And yeah. And listen, if these 2 weeks end up doing remarkably well, no, I do not think this program is getting extended to 4 hours. But will they try this every now and then? I think the answer would be affirmatively yes, they would sure. try this. And as crazy as it sounds, like, dude, the first time Nitro got extended to 3 hours, that must have sounded insane to people. Mm-hmm. Every week you're going to watch something for 3 hours, and now it's the norm.
Yeah, yeah. I'll say, though, it requires, I think, like, a very good roster, which they have. I think it requires enough effort put into the matches that you're actually showcasing. It can't just be a random collection of just like, here's a great match, you know, like, here's a promo to set it up and boom, like, you can watch it. I think it requires a little bit more work than that. And I feel like
that's where the back end of this show, I think, suffered. Yeah. It's like, yeah. you know, you can appreciate great wrestling, and there was great wrestling in those last hour and a half, but it's just natural that you've watched some incredible stuff already at this point, and everyone's got, I think, you know, it's going to vary what your fatigue factor is, and that goes for the live crowds as well. In terms of just coming out of this show, Way, like, how intrigued are you to see this repeated next week, and what they did tonight to set you up for next week?
I think they did a good job. Well, they did a great job making Fighter Fest feel special. I mean, 4 hours to me didn't necessarily feel like something I was dreading. I felt like I was watching a pay-per-view on a Wednesday, at least in some of the matches that they were trying to promote. I'm getting a similar feeling for next week, and that's mainly anchored by Swerve versus Ospreay being, like, certainly a pay-per-view level caliber match. And I guess some of the other matches that they've announced aren't necessarily that, but
it's really that match and the contract signing.
The fact that I'm going to see a lot of the stars, you know, on this product during a really hot time for this product, I think maybe increases my interest in it as well. Ask me again at 11 p.m. on Wednesday next week.
Final thing. Do you see the chance of Ospreay and Swerve doing a draw next week? Do you see them going to, like, a time limit or something like that? Or do you think that they...
Who won the last one?
The last one? Swerve won the last
Swerve
one.
He retained, right?
Yes.
I see Ospreay getting it because I think Tony loves to book the rubber matches. Mm-hmm. And I think that opens the door for a rubber match at either All In or somewhere else down the line. But I see that style of booking taking place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to see these two stay, like, married together through All In. Like, the MJF stuff it's there for Ospreay, but to me, this is the program I'm most interested to see Ospreay with. And you could definitely do a finish next week, and that sets up
a DQ would be so unsatisfying. And that I know they've done
I don't
DQs.
Think they do the DQ. They could
like especially for, like, the Death Riders things. Yes, like, doing the DQ is, like, sort of a way to get heat, but a DQ to out of Swerve versus Ospreay, which I think is the biggest hook for the show, would leave people leaving the show with, I think, a bigger bad taste in their mouth. So I don't necessarily see it. Shelton Mysterio here brings up, I think the Bucks will show up during this match. We haven't seen them since Anarchy in the Arena. It would make sense that they could come in, especially if that might be the all-in match.
Yeah, that was my thought too, is that these two, like, they have this incredible match and then they come together at the end and it's working.
I could
with the Bucks.
See the Bucks maybe costing Swerve the match, leading to further tension between Ospreay and Swerve before they might potentially get back together again. I don't know, but I see a finish, even though it might be a distraction finish or something like that.
All right, we're gonna say goodbye on the YouTube channel, but plenty more coming this week. Again, we'll be live Saturday night here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel right after Money in the Bank, so right around 10 p.m. Eastern time. Subscribe to the channel, and then you will be you'll always be notified when we go live. We're here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Whether a show is 2.5 hours, 3 hours, or 4 hours, we review it. So I'm looking forward to the first ever 5-hour SmackDown.
You joke, but...
All night long.
That sounds so crazy.
Just bleed into Raw. All right. Goodbye to everybody on the YouTube channel. Hang back if you're on the Post Wrestling Cafe, because we have feedback to get to.
This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free select DeWalt, Craftsman, or Kobalt tool with purchase of a select battery kit. Plus, get a free Werner 2-foot aluminum ladder when you buy an 8-foot fiberglass ladder. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.